Hey guys, I don't know if you're like me, but I love Count the Dings and everything it has to offer. I just can't find everything I need. You know, I know about Cinephobe, and I know about the mailbag, and I know about Bomb, but that's all we do, right, Amin?
No, we do so much more.
What?
Yeah, absolutely. If you sign up, patreon.com/countthedings, you'll find a plethora of other content, fresh content, extended content, the OG pod overflow, the Cinephobe cold opens that we've taken and made their own thing to live only there, the Rewatchingtons, Bomb in its full and unadulterated cut, early drops of Cinephobe episodes, and so much more.
Said the OG pod. Now, is it new or is it old?
Mace, I'm glad you asked that. It is a new incarnation of the old OG pod.
Oh.
So it's me, Zach, Trey, Waz, Tom.
I love those guys.
Just like we always were, going back to the True Hoop days, we're recreating that magic, recapturing and putting it back out. We're talking hoops, we're talking pop culture, and most importantly, we're talking for 40 minutes for free, but then another specific Patreon exclusive segment for every one of those episodes.
Funny enough about that OG pod, you're getting Tom and Trey on Mondays, you're getting me and Waz, aka Zosny, on Wednesdays. Amin's floating in between.
I'm a floater.
You never know when you're going to get Amin in those, so you got to listen to them all.
And what if I'm not sure what Maze looks like, because I've always thought he's a fat man with a fedora, he's got a weird voice. How can I see for myself what this Maze character actually looks like?
It's crazy you don't know the answer to this because it's the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page.
What?
The CT5s on the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page. You can look at all of us.
You can get all the OG pods on YouTube too, at Count the Dings 1 on YouTube, at Cinephobe Pod on YouTube. Patreon.com/countthedings gets you everything all in one feed. You can link it to your Spotify. And now enjoy the show.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is Pack Your Knives. I'm Kevin Arnovitz.
And I'm Tom Haverstroh.
And Tom, we have a very special guest this morning. Joining us, from Brooklyn, New York. Is that correct?
Oh, I'm actually in Manhattan now. I've moved up in the world.
All right. Across the river, the East River in Manhattan, is Chef Ash Folk.
Hi, everyone. Good morning. Or hello. No time, right? Sorry. Hello.
We are in a state of suspended time. It is both morning, afternoon, and evening. It is dusk and dawn. It is all hours of all the day.
Thank you for joining us. We're excited to talk to you because you, in my book, Ash, you were the funniest dude, funniest contestant, period, on this show. Last season in the Top Chef All-Stars that ran last year, it might have been in 2017. Stephanie Samar was hilarious. Yeah. I thought she could do stand-up comedy. And I actually think you might have bested her in just the one-liners you had in this season throughout. So I have to ask, are you a comedian like on the side?
No, certainly not. I'm just a little silly, I think. And I don't take things too seriously. So, but certainly not a comedian.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun to watch you on this show. So let's just zoom out for a second. What are you doing right now in terms of, you're at a barbecue joint in Brooklyn?
I am. Actually, it's in Manhattan. We have one in Manhattan, one in D.C. It's called Hill Country Barbecue Market.
Know it well.
Yeah, it's good New York barbecue. I've been there for like 10 years now. It was sort of like after the show, I got off and realized I was not the next Danielle Ballude. And I started cooking food I really like to eat. So kind of where I ended up.
Yeah, actually, as Tom was mentioning earlier, I have what I call the elevator standard, which is of these contestants, whom do I want to be stalled in an elevator for 2 hours with, like in descending order, and you were my season 6 winner of these contestants.
Oh, thank you.
I want to talk more about Hill Country Barbecue. I also want to talk about like one's education in barbecue. Tom knows this. I led a uh, a barbecue tour of Central Texas when all the NBA reporters were down in San Antonio for the 2014 or 13 finals, one of those two, Tom.
Awesome.
And so I am a I'm a huge connoisseur, though I have given up meat for the year. And I've been to Hill Country. I have been to Hill Country. And I'm also fascinated in kind of because I think there was this notion for a very long time in this country. You can't get good bagels in Los Angeles. And why would you eat pizza in Atlanta? And who gets brisket or, you know, ribs in New York, as if like there's some magic in the water in certain regions. But the idea, though, I have to say, of the challenge of whatever it is you have to build, because I've been to Smitty's and Lockhart and seen those enormous pipes. And I'm like, I am curious about how you can infrastructurally do the job in New York. So I'm actually really curious to talk about that with you. But first, like, how did you get, like, can you catch us up on your life for the last 10 years?
Yeah. I mean, so, you know, I got off the show. I went back to the restaurant I was at, Trestle on 10th. I was there for another year, which I promised the chef I would do. And then I decided I needed to do something else, make a change. I did consulting chef for a while, which of course means unemployed chef.
Okay, that's, that makes sense now. Okay. I never know.
Yeah. It means unemployed chef, but they'll anyone fool you. So I just sort of bounced around from kitchen to kitchen, some friends, and, you know, was sort of directionless because the show sort of, always kind of like, checks your ego. And my friend, actually Merriman, who we were pretty close at the time, she was just like, told me to cook food I like to eat. And I was like, well, I only like to eat kind of trashy food. Like, I like to eat barbecue. I like to eat Southern food. You know, I don't, she's like, so find a place that cooks Southern food. So I got involved with Hill Country at that point. And I've been there ever since, actually.
Remind me where you grew up?
I grew up in California, like the East Bay.
Okay.
Yeah. So I grew up, you know, sort of not really Southern, but my father was from North Carolina. So I always had this kind of allure to like the South. And I grew up doing summers in North Carolina, eating pulled pork barbecue and that kind of thing. So.
Where's your father from?
Winston-Salem.
Oh, hey, I'm a Wake Forest guy. So.
Oh, okay, great. Awesome. Yeah, yeah.
I live in Charlotte now. Yeah.
Oh, Charlotte's great. Charlotte's got a barbecue, a couple of good barbecue spots.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what's the secret to making good pulled pork?
I mean, there's a lot of secrets because there's a lot of ways to make it. You know, I think some of the best pulled pork in the country is coming from Rodney Scott out of Charleston.
My family's from Charleston. And I love Rodney Scott.
He's amazing.
Unreal.
Amazing pit master. But he does that whole hog. So there's sort of the whole hog thing. Or do you like the butt thing? Do you like it juicy? You know, do you like it like a meatier? Do you like it more like with all the bits and pieces of hog in it, which I personally like? I think the key to pulled pork is just long, slow, low, and good smoke. I'm a post oak fan, obviously, because I'm from, you know, I do Central Texas barbecue, but a lot of people swear by hickory on pork, but I kind of think it's good with post oak, but that might be blasphemy. I don't know.
No, as long as you just throw a lot of vinegar in pulled pork, I'm good to go.
Put a lot of vinegar in it. I love a good vinegar sauce.
So did you, when you were on Top Chef, did you ever envision yourself as going into barbecue?
No. When I was on Top Chef, I envisioned myself being the most premier chef in New York City that everyone came to worship at the altar of my stove. That's really what it started out as, but I ended up in barbecue. So,
how'd you get on Top Chef?
So I actually applied. That was the second time I applied. So I applied late for the season before because I saw Hosea won. And Hosea, I thought... And I don't know him at all, so this is. But I was like, I can cook better than that guy. I mean, well, you know, I got a 1 in 16 chance of $100,000. I'm doing it. And they had called me back for this season
six. Yeah,
six. Thank you, season six. Sorry, it was a long time ago. You called me back for season six, and I was like, at the end of it, I was bummed I wasn't on season five because I think I might have done a little better because I got thrown in with Michael Vitaggio and Brian Vitaggio and. You know, Kevin, and they were all just like next level. And I was just a little pipsqueak sous chef at a small restaurant in New York. So that's how I got on. They just called me and I went through the whole audition process. They happened to be in New York, so they were able to come to the restaurant. I did a tasting for them with only 5 hours of preparation, which I think is part of the game. And they liked everything and flew me to LA and the rest is, you know, history.
What did you cook for them?
Well, I did several courses. I started with oddly enough, a beef cheek rillette and a bunch of charcuterie that we do at the restaurant, which is really one of the things I love. I love sausage and charcuterie and making all that stuff, which makes sense to kind of go into barbecue. It's sort of similar skill set to do barbecue and charcuterie. So I made that, and then I did like a duck crepe, you know, like scallion crepe thing with like little morels and peas, you know, very classic. I think for dessert, I did a pear galette with a creme fraiche ice cream. I don't remember.
There was this on the show, Ash. This sounds amazing.
Oh, believe me, I ask myself that question in the shower every morning. Where was this shit on the show, you know?
Yeah, Kevin and I were amazed, not just by your commentary, but you had like really good ideas and just couldn't just pull through. It was like you had to switch
and burned.
You had to switch like halfway through. You know, you just had to stick with your guns.
Oh, if I stuck with my guns, I think I would have made it to Restaurant Wars at least. I mean, I don't think I would have beat Michael Battaggio, like looking back on it. I mean, there's no better cook than him, unfortunately. And I was up against him. So but I definitely like, and again, like I've been listening to the pod because I'm like walking down memory lane, and I haven't thought about this in years. You know, I just sort of put it away.
We are the voice of your nightmares that have been banished in the.
It's actually kind of nice because
the recesses of your mind.
Now that my like your ego is sort of taken out of it, and the feeling of loss is like over. You know, I'm a pretty successful guy right now and doing really well. The feeling of loss is over. You're able to like. Remember the fun times. Like you guys were doing the episode, the camping episode, which I loved the episode of the pod. And it was just so funny remembering I slept in that tent with Big Ron. Like we shared that tent. And he put those sticks out in front of the tent to ward off the snakes. And so I'm going to sleep and he's like, what are the sticks for, Ron? He's like, they're for the snakes. I was like, okay, that's terrifying. I'm going to sleep an hour and a half.
Thank you for warding off the snakes. I don't care how you do it. That sounds like a great idea.
Yeah, exactly. It's a fun time.
Yeah. I guess the first episode you had to cook for Wolfgang Puck.
Yeah.
Right.
And so I did something real stupid. Yeah.
Yeah. He was a great judge. He was a lot of fun to watch, but I'd imagine just, you were thrown into the fire there. The first episode did you know who Michael Voltaggio and Brian Voltaggio were before you got there?
Yeah, I knew who Michael was. I didn't know Brian. Michael was up for Best New Chef Food and Wine that day or that at that time. In fact, he found out on the show that he didn't win, but he was up for that. So I'd heard of him because I saw the nominations come out. I didn't really know much about him, but I did when I arrived. I went, you know, you go around. It's very awkward. You introduce yourself to everybody, and everyone sort of gave their CV a little bit, like, oh, hey, I'm, you know, Robin, I'm from San Francisco and I do this, you know? And I was like, hey, I'm Ash. I'm from New York City. And everybody's like, oh, cool. He's like a New York City. I was the only real New York City chef on there. Sorry, New York. And I shook everyone's hand and met him. And then everyone's like, yeah, I'm chef de cuisine here. Or I own my own place or I'm this. And I was like, I'm just a little sous chef. And then the first day of challenges, and Tom and I had done a couple events in New York together. Of course, we just crossed paths, you know? And so he goes, oh, I know Ash. I've worked with Ash. So everyone's looking at me like I'm this crazy threat. And I'm just like, my guys, stay calm. You're freaking Michael Vitaggio. You'll bake bread on a stone in a middle of a desert and be perfect.
It is so funny because your self-deprecation became a hallmark and now it all makes sense, right? like you're there with imposter syndrome, and the worst thing that happens is when people actually think you're this world beater and you're not totally in on the joke yet.
Yeah.
And no, it was one of the more charming things about it. We always like to kind of talk about the mechanics of the show because it is, I mean, you do totally have, and one of the great debates we had, oh, Tom, it was with our friend in West Hartford, our barbecue take.
Tyler Anderson, yep.
Anderson, because who's a fellow traveler in barbecue world with you, and whose place was great in West Hartford.
Yeah.
It is sort of one of the great questions is, if you throw 16 chefs into a Top Chef season, is the general impression as someone who's actually done this that they'll finish in order of their overall skills as a chef, or is there something particularly unique to the skill sets you have to do to win at Top Chef that you can take some of the top chefs in the world and they might fall flat because it just, like, the show itself demands such a weird skill set of timing and sort of working with limitations. I mean, are you somebody who believes that, like, look, it's really its own sport? Top Chef never determines who the best chef is. It determines who the best chef of Top Chef is.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's completely accurate. I would say that was one of the things that I often say the show beat me, because it was these sort of quick challenges that I would overthink or underthink, depending on the challenge. And I would just, like, not just cook food and not be able to mess with it. Now, the thing is, it's really a big mental game. So if you're one of those people, like I think if I went on the show now, I'd feel much better about a lot of the food I made, because I'm 40 now. I'm not 29. And I'm just, like, very comfortable in cooking simple food and cooking sort of straight on and you know, not forgetting flavor and really, like, nailing the elements. Because you really have to be strong and confident in yourself and what you're doing. And if you aren't there, you're going to get knocked off very quickly. And you sort of see that in every season. You see the chefs that get knocked off are not the competent ones. And then you go to the restaurants and you're like, they're brilliant. This is delicious, you know, and I don't know why they would get knocked off. And it's really the game is hard. And now that I've played it once, I think if I played it again, I'd be obviously better.
We heard
not
from
that I want to.
We heard from Chef Jen. We had her on a couple of weeks ago. She's like a lifer on Top Chef. She was describing the stew room. You're in there for like hours.
Hours, yeah. My season, we were in there. When I got eliminated, it was like 5 a.m. that we got out of there. We finished Big Campino, and I walked to the van, because you like pack an overnight bag and they take you to your van and they take you to a different room. And it was like 5 a.m. I was loopy and I was wasted too, because they gave me all the wine from Pigs and Pino. Like, the guy from the stew room sent it to me in the like exit interview, and I just started drinking pretty heavily, which is probably why I said the nasty things about Padma.
What did you say about Padma?
No, I just said, at the end of the interview, then this actually aired, I said some less choice things off air, and then on the air I said, oh, I'd have everyone over for dinner except Padma. And that got picked up, like every press was picked that up and was just like, oh, Ash hates Padma. And I'm like, I don't hate Padma. She just didn't like any food I made. So just, you know, and I was getting kicked off a show. So
it's funny.
Yeah. Did you do any Top Chef like events afterwards, or were you just clear of Top Chef after you?
No, I did a ton. I did 2 years. They did that weird tour where they went to different towns. I did 2 years with that. I did like Grand Rapids, Michigan and Seattle and a couple other spots. And then I did 3 Top Chef cruises.
Oh yeah. Yes. What's that like? Kevin?
Yeah,
Kevin,
what is that like? I'm terrified of cruises.
Kevin.
Oh, they're weird.
One time I went on a vacation. Kevin and I worked together at ESPN in 2010 and 11. Mm-hmm. And I took my then girlfriend, now wife, to a cruise down to, I think, Cozumel, maybe. Kevin was like, why? I don't get it. You're trapped on a boat. You can't leave. It's just, there's kids everywhere. That doesn't sound like vacation. That sounds like hell.
Try being trapped on a boat where everyone on that boat wants to talk to you.
All right, so describe the ecology of a Top Chef cruise. Like, who's buying cabins on a Top Chef cruise?
I am.
Well, so there's two types of people on a Top Chef cruise. So one is just the cruisers, right, that just buy a celebrity cruise, because it was with Celebrity Cruises. And so they have several things going on the boat. Like, one of them was Top Chef. One of them might be, you know, jugglers. And one of them might be Magic Camp, you know.
Top Chef is not the entire cruise. You're like one section of the cruise.
Exactly. You're one section. But we dominate it because we actually do the main dining room. We do menus for the main dining room. We walk around the main dining room, but it's actually great when you walk around the dining room and you go to that old couple that just booked the cruise and doesn't know anything about Top Chef, and you walk their table like, how is everything? And they're like, fine, who are you? And you're just like, oh, I designed the menu. You know, it's really it was a fun experience, and I'd never been on a cruise, and they of course take care of you, VIP all the way, you know, like I drank a lot of pina coladas. But yeah, there was, we got into port in the third year I did it. We got into port in, I forgot, St. Martin's or something. And I was just like, I don't want to get off the boat. I just want to go to my room and like hide under the covers and eat spaghetti and watch TV. And of course the only thing on TV was Top Chef. So it was, not as pleasant as you might imagine.
Wow. Well, we would be remiss if we didn't just go through a couple of the highlights of the season. The thing, I think when we texted you or when we reached out to you, you had forgotten about Robin. Is that true?
Totally. I'd like totally blocked her out. And because I didn't really have many great interactions with her. I mean, she just talked a lot and I just walked away. I mean, Eli was the one that had like, was angry at Robin for some, I don't know what he was going through, but he was mad at her. But I really, you know, I got along with her fine. She just like, you know, yeah, she should have been eliminated instead of me, but you know, it was fine. It's fine. We got along.
The episode with Hector, when you guys were teamed up. Yeah, you just grabbed your chest.
I love like, Hector. I love isn't Hector.
It's when he was eliminated, you guys were both up there. What was it like being up there team? Those duos, those partner competitions, elimination challenges are so difficult because you don't want to throw your teammate under the bus, but you also don't want to get eliminated. And hearing Hector like fall on the sword and all that and just it seemed like he was going out the most honorable elimination I've ever seen.
Well, and that's sort of what you were talking about, Kevin, about the game, right? That's part of the game. Like, you have to decide if you're going to play the game. You know, like Survivor, what's your gameplay? You know, I could easily, in a elimination situation, push someone else towards getting kicked off. And Hector could have done the same thing. I mean, I could have easily gone that time than Hector, and he didn't. Because the note was really about the overcooked meat, you know, and the resting of the meat. And I didn't actually rewatch that episode, so I don't remember exactly what happened, but I know there was a lot of issues. He was trying to do all this, you know, thermometers and things, and I was just like, dude, just cook. It's a chateau, just cook it, like, and be done with it. And I just went too clean with my sauce, and it was just like there was the excuse that the meat bled onto the plate, which did happen in a couple of them and probably did lose the sauce, but my sauce was really thin anyway. And it was really just this light, which I thought was cool. But when Robichon gets a peppercorn sauce, he's not thinking of this light, clean, you know, sauce. And actually Jen Carroll helped me make it. She said to me, she's like, why don't you make this a sherry gastrique and finish it with that? And I was like, that's brilliant. You know? And I just did it, you know, did it because Jen told me to, and she's the queen of sauce.
She is the queen of sauce. She's the queen of so many things. She's fantastic. She's so talented. There's much in that portfolio.
Yeah,
we become huge fans. What's the hardest social dynamic about the show? I mean, one of the things that terrifies me, just being an introvert and a little bit of a personal space freak, is like when they fade in after the theme song and they're like freaking 14 people waking up in one bedroom. Like, it is just, it gives me, I have like anxiety just for about 90 seconds about what it would be like, especially in the most intense environment imaginable, and then coming home with 11 strangers sharing a bathroom.
Being the only gay dude too.
I mean, I've been the only gay dude in many situations like that, but yeah. I'm just sort of like, that in and of itself just gives me more anxiety than having to like cook for Padma. Like, what is the social dynamic in the house?
Well, my bunk was next to Mike Isabella, which we became fast friends because he is actually a hilarious guy with a huge heart. I know he's had a lot of problems recently, but he's, you know, I woke up in the morning and I just have his little face staring at me and he says, you know, what's up, fucker? And I'm like, good morning. You know, I'm just like, you know, so I like the social dynamic of it. I had, again, you know, season 6 was a really special season, I'm sure everyone says that, but for me, everybody just was, we were all in it to do the best food possible. There was very little like competition and backstabbing that you see in some of the early seasons, you know, there's like, there was no, like, I'm not your bitch and all that shenanigans. I think behind the scenes, I mean, Robin was obviously the villain of the season. But I kind of liked it. For me, it's like I got a 5-week masterclass in how to have how to be a great chef and how to be a great cook. And I got that from, you know, being in the room with them, hearing everyone talk about stuff that was like, you know, next level. I mean, Michael and Brian only spoke to each other. I don't think Brian knows how to move his lips at all. So he'd like, they would be sitting there and just like kind of mumble to each other in their little brother speak. So they were off in the corners next to each other. But yeah, it is very strange. But you get used to it.
Hello, listener. I'm sure you don't need me to tell you that we at Cinephobe love our pets. Zach and Boogie are inseparable. I've got two cats and a dog, and Amin is giving his best ass-on performance to convince dog owners that he loves their pet.
Hey, Noodle. Hey, boy. How you doing? And Noodle's just like,
Which is why today's episode is sponsored by the ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program. For many pet parents, summer is all about making travel plans like adventuring through the national parks, visiting pet-friendly beaches, or road tripping across the country. Wherever your journeys take you and your furry friend, you can help protect them along the way with a plan from ASPCA Pet Health Insurance. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program offers customizable accident and illness plans, making it easier for pet parents like you to help your pet get the care they may need. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program has been around for over 18 years, and they've helped more than 600,000 pets during that time. They allow you to customize your plan, helping ensure that your pet's plan is as unique as they are, because vet bills can really add up, especially when you're least expecting it. It's simple. Use their app to submit a claim, and you'll receive reimbursement for your eligible vet bills directly into your bank account. To explore coverage, visit aspcapetinsurance.com/dings, D-I-N-G-S. That's aspcapetinsurance.com/dings. Again, that's aspcapetinsurance.com/dings. This is a paid advertisement. Insurance is underwritten by either Independence American Insurance Company or United States Fire Insurance Company and produced by PTZ Insurance Agency Limited. The ASPCA is not an insurer and is not engaged in the business of insurance. Hello, listener. Guess who's back? It's me, Anthony Mays, your favorite butcher-turned-podcast producer, and I'm here to talk to you about ButcherBox. ButcherBox is the most convenient way to get high-quality meat and seafood that you can trust delivered straight to your doorstep. Free shipping, vacuum sealed packaging. It's ready to go right then. It's ready to pop in the freezer. You get exclusive member deals and a variety of high quality cuts at an amazing value. Going to the grocery store can be a huge pain. You're usually in a rush at an inconvenient time. You're waiting in line at the meat counter. You're taking a number. Maybe this place doesn't have a number. You're jostling with fellow customers. You're trying to get that ribeye that you want or that nice piece of salmon. Maybe the butcher that you're dealing with has a bad attitude or something. I don't know. That was never me, I promise. But maybe it happens. ButcherBox takes all of that out of the picture. You are always prepared with meat and seafood in the freezer, and you're not going to find quality for this price anywhere else other than ButcherBox. So sign up at butcherbox.com/dings, D-I-N-G-S, and get our special deal. ButcherBox is offering our listeners a free for a year offer plus an additional $20 off. You can choose salmon, chicken breasts, or steak tips free in every order for a year. Sign up today at butcherbox.com/dings and use code DINGS, D-I-N-G-S, to choose your free for a year offer plus get $20 off your first order.
We don't have any spoilers on this show, so you're doing a great job so far not spoiling anything that happens in the next six or so episodes. But
it's funny you talk about team challenges because something crazy is coming up in a team challenge that I happen to be a part of.
Where did you get sequestered after you're eliminated in Vegas?
So that is like the weirdest part of the show, and I'm like allowed to talk about it because my NDA is all over. But
wait, how long does an NDA last? Like 10 years?
Mine's 10 years, yeah.
And it's like, oh, we're officially at like kind of the 10-year point.
Yeah, so
it's like all the Nixon tapes come out now, right? Like this is like where, okay. So, all right, so tell us about the, like, so where did you go?
Great, okay.
Yes.
I get eliminated, you do your exit interview for hours, and you get to know the crew very well. And my producer is very sweet. And none of them wanted me to leave because, again, I was good at probably the production part of doing the exit interviews. And I was, you know, I'm a nice guy. Like I'm not yelling at anybody. I never yelled at a camera crew person. I used to mess with the sound guys and like say dirty things in their ears, you know, like we had a fun time. So they all walk me out. Everyone's very sweet. And I get in the car, it's dark, it's pitch black, it's Vegas. And they start driving me out of town towards the airport. And I'm like, what am I getting on a plane right now? Like, what's happening? And of course I'm drunk, I'm confused, I'm sad, you know, I feel like a failure. So they drive me in to a condominium complex. And I go into a house. They unlock the door. They take me to the room. They put me there. They're like, keys are here. Go to sleep. I'm like, okay. Well, of course you don't sleep. But eventually I fell asleep. And I wake up the next morning to just this knock on my door. And it's Big Ron. And he's like, Ash, get up. And I'm like, okay. So I get up. I go out. All the eliminated chefs are sitting on a couch. And there's like mimosas and breakfast ready to go. And they're just all sitting there being like, okay, give us a scoop. What happened? You know, they're just desperate to know what happened. So it's actually really great, the sequester part, because you just like, you have very little stress left and you just kind of show up and like everybody loves you and everybody wants to talk to you and everybody wants to get the scoop and you eat together, you drink together. You tell the producers, I want this from the shopping list, and they go get whatever you want. I mean, it's pretty incredible. Hector and Mateen had a ham hanging in front of their house, in front of their condo.
A ham. So what do you do all day? Do you like sit by the pool or something? Or is there a pool?
Yeah. In that case, I don't think there was a pool in that condo. I mean, basically Ash and I just sort of hung out all day and started drinking around noon and, you know, ate pasta at night and ate amazing food. There was one breakout that we did do. Because you still don't get your cell phone. You don't get anything back because you're sequestered still.
Oh, my God.
And everybody went to a Grand Canyon trip one day. And Ashley and I are like, oh, we're sick. We can't go. And then we broke out and went to a mall that was down the block and ate a Buffalo Wild Wings, which was like – I mean, it's so stupid, but it's exactly what we did. And it would just – it hit the spot. You know what I mean? Like, we were in a restaurant. I don't think we even talked that much, really. We were just sort of like – normal restaurant. And then they do trips. Like, they took us to Mario Batali, invited us to one of his restaurants because he knew we were in town. So we went to one of his restaurants and we did a little gambling here and there, but we had to stay really hush hush. And there was no real high profile chefs that got eliminated till the end. You know, no one would have known us walking around. So I think, you know, we had a little freedom, but not a ton.
Right. And so and now y'all are all just waiting around like 2 days and then Laureen shows up. Right. Like, and it's just like, who's, and then you start the whole process again. Right.
Yeah. You don't know. So it was very weird. And then Jen, who obviously was there the longest, she was like the queen of it. She knew the ins and outs. She knew how to break in, how to break out. She knew whose producer's phone you could steal for a minute. And like, it was pretty wild.
No, I love that she's the Birdman of Alcatraz or something. Like, she's the one who knows how to like, oh, that's funny.
She's also the best. She's amazing. I'm obsessed with her Instagram.
I do want to talk a little barbecue with you because it's such a rare skill. Like, I imagine, did you have the moment between then and now where you did the whole Central Texas thing? Like, you're going to Lulling and Lockhart and Llano. And what about the sausages in Elgin and all that business that is such like, I mean, those trips for me were just so much fun. And I'm just curious. I mean, you always, you know, you like charcuterie, you like meat, but it's such a rarefied skill. Like, it is just this dark art. That not everybody can do. And so how did you sort of educate yourself on to the point where you could do the most notable barbecue in the most notable city?
Yeah, I mean, it was, so I got involved with Hill Country originally at a fried chicken concept they did, because I'm equally obsessed with fried chicken. And I'd been going to barbecue for like my birthday every year. You know, people ask what do I want to do for my birthday dinner, go to whatever barbecue restaurant I could go to. And I'd been obsessed sort of smoking meats, not necessarily in the barbecue world. So I knew how to smoke. Barbecue, of course, was the next level of that.
Right.
So when I went to Hill Country, I got even more obsessed with it. And I just started researching and studying and reading and, you know, everything anyone does. And then I started going to Austin once a year. And I would do pretty much everybody in Lockhart, Austin, go down to Central Market, Gideon. I'd hit everybody. The only place I haven't hit, which I'm heartbroken about yet, is Snow's. And now, I'm sure you guys saw it, the Chef's Table released a Snow's barbecue on Netflix. Yeah, so I'm never going to be able to get in there. But
that's funny. Went everywhere. Like you just get upset when
when a
hole in the wall place or your favorite like down and dirty place gets on Chef's Table, you're like, fuck, I can't go there anymore.
I know, pretty much. I mean, I'm going to try this next year if we can travel again. But so that's when I got sort of obsessed with it. And then I got in with Kreitz Market. So Hill Country has a good relationship with Kreitz.
And I was going to ask you, because I know their stuff is on your menu. Yes, and I wasn't sure if did you have to like get that license, like their jalapeno hot links or whatever?
We actually ship it from Kreitz. From them, exactly. So it's, you know, and we actually have started making our own sausage at this point. We still keep them on the menu. Just sort of as like, if you're an expat and you love Kreitz Market, you can get the exact sausage from there. But they, yeah, so I worked with them. I worked with Roy, and went down there and sort of studied at Kreitz. It's kind of where I got my, bones, Roy and Rick Schmidt down there.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Can you give me the skinny on the Kreutz Smitty's like family? Like, so for our listeners, yeah. Kreutz is right across the street next to Smitty's, who I love for fatty brisket, right?
Yeah.
And it's sort of like there was a schism in the. I mean, I don't want to put you in an awful position. These are friends, but I've always been fascinated by the dueling barbecue across the street. They are family, but they're now rivals, kind of thing.
Yeah. So there's legends and facts, and all of that mixed together makes barbecue, right? There's a lot of legend versus fact, but this is what I know as the legend. And I don't know any detailed facts, and Rick Schmidt, who has passed, wouldn't really talk about it when I was sitting at a table with him. And I tried to get it in a cool way. Actually, it was me and Michelle Bernstein, oddly enough, were at this table at the same time. And we were like chatting, and I was trying to get Rick to like spill his beans, but he was too polite. So the short story is, Rick's father owned Smitty's and left the business to the sister, and left the building to the sister and the business to Rick. So they each owned half of it, and the sister decided to do something with the building that Rick, you know, legend is she raised rent on him or something. Who knows what actually happened. And Rick was like, well, screw you. I don't need that. I'm going to open my own restaurant. The legend is that he built Kreitz, the first Kreitz, which was much smaller than it is now, built the first Kreitz, built the pits, went to Smitty's, loaded a metal box with the coals from Smitty's, and walked over to Kreitz to light the fires again. I don't know if that's true, but we actually at Hill Country, when we opened our Brooklyn restaurant, we took the coals from the Manhattan restaurant to the Brooklyn restaurant to light them for the first time. So,
like on the subway?
Well, we had a car. We took.
Okay,
car.
I was just
probably stupid. Too,
I'm just like actually. Imagining transporting coals from Manhattan, you know, like
on the A train. Yeah, that's. I mean, I've seen weird stuff on the subway, but that would take the cake.
I love like barbecue lore is great. This is honestly one of my favorite trips. I loved going to Elgin. There used to be a great place that closed, I think 10 years ago, called Crosstown Sausage. Mm. And I just, those are some of my favorite, Lulling and City Market. All that stuff is just.
Have you done Louis Miller?
Yeah, Louis Miller. I mean, I had sort of my Lulling, Lockhart, Elgin. And then if you go out to Mason and Yano and a couple of those places a little bit farther west. But
and different barbecue out there, too.
Yeah.
Like, starts to get real different because they have different woods that start to come in with post oak. So.
Is it just hard to do in Manhattan? I mean, I just, like, you're in the Flatiron District. Like, how the hell? It just requires space and, like as you say, wood and coals. Like, things that you're not just going to, like, check in with a doorman. Like,
what happens to, like... I'd imagine
how do you do this?
How do you do an indoor pit, you know?
So it's actually really complicated, especially Manhattan, because there's a lot of regulations. So we have 12 stories of black iron that goes all the way up the back of the building, which is because it has to go to the roof. We have precipitators on the roof, which scrub the smoke out of the air, which is crazy and expensive. Mm. So we kind of had to build up rather than build long. You know, in Texas, they have all the space in the world, so they can build these very long pits. So we built up and we built in a rotisserie. So actually what happens is the meat sort of like is turned like this instead of the smoke going like this because we don't have the space.
That doesn't affect the taste or anything, right?
No, I don't think. I think it's better than Lockhart. I mean,
cool.
I've been to Kreitz many times and I love them. And there's been many times I have a great slice of brisket there. And there's many times I have a real miss on brisket. And we smoke differently than they do. They smoke a lot hotter at about 325. We smoke much lower at like 200 to 225.
Wow.
So we're as really long. It's almost a 16-hour cook on brisket for us, which I like a lot better. And, you know, I think it just gets a lot more smoke. It never gets that acrid kind of burning taste. Just as this sweet, beautiful brisket. And then, you know, we make 40, well, not now, but we used to make, you know, 40 to 50 briskets a day. Which is a lot of brisket, and they're pretty consistent. So I was pretty proud of them. Still am proud. But
hey,
we're doing a lot less now.
when you have you had any contestants come by Hill Country? Like any?
Yeah. I mean, Ashley's been, I think, Eli didn't come. He came to the city, but he didn't make it. Arian, not from RC. I'm friends with Arian as well, just because she's in the neighborhood from season 2? Question mark. I don't know.
Yeah.
But yeah, not a lot of people come to New York. Oddly enough, I mean, right after the show, there was a lot of back and forth, and I was at Trestle. And most of the time, when a chef's coming to New York, they don't really have time. Like, they're coming to do an event for Beard House or whatever. They're not stopping to come to Hill Country. So, not a lot of them come in. And honestly, now at this point, we're practically just DMing through Instagram at this point. There's not a lot of like texting back and forth like there was right when you first got off, you know? I think Mateen's not even cooking any real estate agent or something now, I think. But
yeah.
We saw them, the Where Are They Now kind of thing.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, I don't know. I don't know where. I mean, Ashley just was at Prune. You guys know that probably, which just unfortunately is closed now. Hopefully it will reopen. We're all in New York hoping it does because it's a great restaurant. And Jen's just killing in Philly and, you know, they're around, I think.
Did you make up with Padma?
So, funny story. My this whole like I hate Padma thing sort of got blown out of proportion. And she actually came to Hill Country one day and got some fried chicken. And she just come from like boxing class. I was like, oh, hey, Padma, what's up? She's like, oh, Ash, blah, blah, blah. And it was kind of awkward because you start to sort of believe the media at some point, you know, like even though you know that there's never really a fight. And then my husband works in entertainment and he was at an agency party. And Padma was one of the guests. So he walked up to Padma to tell her off because he was like, oh, she, you know. So he walks up to her and she goes, hey, Padma, I'm Ash Falk's husband or something. And Padma said, oh, I love Ash. He was my favorite on the show. He was so sweet and kind. And I was like, oh, God. and it's just great. So, of course, he's like standing there gobsmacked. He comes home mad at me, of course, saying like, she says she loved you. I'm like, yeah, that was all blown out of proportion. You know, it's fine. But I tell you, she's never coming to one of my restaurants.
Well,
I'm kidding.
You had a couple dishes. What was the dish that she that stands out to you that was either unfair or that you were like, no, that was actually a really good fucking dish?
Well, I would say the frozen custard was really good.
Yeah,
and she just didn't buy my bullshit on it. So
that was like you're supposed to do ice cream that ended up being custard. Is that right?
Yeah, because you can't make ice cream in 20 minutes. I don't know. Turns out. So it barely turned, and you could see my station. I used every tool in the kitchen to try to make this damn thing. And I was trying to use tools I didn't know how to use. Like, I got the Paco Jet, and Eli was sitting next to me. He's like, dude, if you don't know how to use that, don't do that, because you're going to cut your hand off. I was like, okay, no Paco Jet. And I just tried to use a traditional ice cream maker. So to cook a sweet potato and to make sweet potato ice cream in 20 minutes, I was pretty impressed. It was even a frozen custard, to be honest. But that was a stretch. And it actually tasted good. It tasted great. I mean, Mark Peel liked it. But Padma just saw that I was just trying to bullshit the bullshit the system, which I did.
It's a skill.
Which is part of the show, frankly.
I mean, yeah, that's the game.
There was a moment where Eli brought in like a faulty pressure cooker that might have been a bomb.
Yeah. Yeah,
it didn't
blow
up.
I don't think it blew up. I don't really remember the details, but he definitely like just didn't seal the cooker hard enough, and the pressure built, and it just sort of like it released and made a loud sound. It didn't blow up the place. I mean, they blew that out of proportion, but you know, and Eli, you know, he didn't quite know what he was doing. I think with a pressure cooker, he's used to, you know, a circulator and time and plastic instead of cooking. So,
did you ever want to come back to Top Chef, or were you like, I'm good?
I did. About 5 years ago, they reached out to me to do, I think the first All-Stars was 5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
They reached out to me and I went through the process and went to you have to go to a psychologist to make sure you're not crazy. And I went.
What's that examination like?
It's like the personality test.
Yeah. Oh, no, I mean, there's a psychologist there.
Yeah. So you take the personality test and then they give it to a psychologist and then you sit with the psychologist to sort of, or, you know, to see like if you're actually nuts. It's like, does your father love you? Do you love your father? Or does your mother, like those kind of questions? And I think I failed it. And I think that's why, I'm just kidding. So I took it and then we went back and forth and, cause I was like, I really wanted to know what I was getting myself into. Like, would I be able to actually bring a recipe on, was I going to embarrass myself, went back and forth, and then Rich Sweeney decided to do it, I think. So they chose Rich. They only needed one gay in the village, apparently, so they chose Rich for casting, which is fine. Probably better.
I bet they won a little bit. Like, it's helpful for the show to have a few borderline candidates.
Yeah,
for sure. In terms of, because you don't want everyone to be a portrait of normality, because then it's no fun.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, when we watching the season, that was one of the biggest things we noticed was just how the humor was much more, to steal a certain person's line, more locker room talk on the previous seasons than now. I don't think a lot of stuff that Isabella said would make it to air. When you watched an episode recently, what was the thing that jumped out to you?
That I swear a lot. Like, I am bleeped, especially this last episode with the one I got eliminated. I am bleeped everywhere, and I remember because I started watching the reunion. They have a whole reel in the reunion that they didn't air of me just swearing, because apparently, like, I swear the entire time, and I've forgotten some of the facts that I swear. But I noticed that about myself. I noticed that Mike's can be a real prick, but I love it. Called Rotten Robin. I forgot about that.
Rotten Robin. Did you know when you were going up to the elimination table? I don't know if it was this most recent one, but when you called Michael Voltaggio the Picasso, and you were just washing his brushes, was that just spontaneous when you said that?
It was spontaneous and weird. And the best part is that you, I don't know where it came from. Like, the shit that comes out of my mouth, I'm like, what? Where did that come from? And he, he gets, obviously dodges the elimination. I was in his group, and he made the ravioli with the egg yolk and it was genius, right? And I made, like, I think I tossed a salad or something. I don't remember what I did. So we get back in the van and we're all depressed because I forgot who got eliminated. Oh, Ashley got eliminated.
Yeah.
That round. And Ashley and I were pretty close in the show. And, she was a super talented chef. I don't know why she would not be in the show, but whatever. So she got eliminated. So we're all kind of bummed about it. And it's dead silent in the van. And Michael goes, "Hey, Ash, my knives are kind of dirty. You want to wash them when we get back to the house?" And it was just like the exact kind of tension. Because people don't think of Michael as a funny guy, but he's pretty funny. So yes, I regretted saying that the moment it came out of my mouth. And I think that was the moment that Tom sort of was like, "Who is this clown? Like, what is his deal?" So
I actually thought it was endearing, right, Kevin? Like, the idea of, like,
it was endearing. I mean, I won't lie to you, Ashley. It was a little cringe inducing just because Tom Colicchio, for all his refinement, it's sort of like he's thinking, like, "God, this guy's a doormat," or like, "I don't say that about another chef." Like, there is a certain still machismo associated with the kitchen, right? And then, like, he's bootlicking or something, but even though, like, especially I knew exactly where it came from, right?
Yeah, it came from, you're working with this guy that, right. And also, why would Michael Voltaggio listen to me? And that was my own drama, my own damage during that time, because I'm not going to be Robin yelling at the kitchen of Michael Voltaggio about a frangipane tart, because, I think I might have spoiled. That might be a spoiler. You might need to.
Well, we might bleep. We might not.
Okay, great. Great.
Because it was the electrical circuits that were breaking in that episode, right? And
the electric kept going out. I will say, in my defense, I did tell Michael, Michael, this isn't working. Like, we should do something else for the fish. And I know how to cook fish pretty well. So, and he didn't listen to me. But I don't know that he should have. When you're talking, I don't know. I've been watching him the whole competition. So, and again, you're right. There is the machismo in the kitchen. And that is, especially even 10 years ago, the difference between now and then. It's the kitchen is totally different nowadays. But yeah, Tom was definitely, I think, at that point.
Are there things that people hit you more about the show? Like, when they find out you're on Top Chef season 6, or they recognize you from Top Chef season 6, is there a moment that people associate you with?
I forgot the flavors, probably the most common moment. which I have to give credit. I think if I recall correctly, I can't remember if I said it first or Ashley said it first. I think Ashley may have said it first, and it was sort of like a running joke
that we kept saying that over and over again. Oh, I forgot flavor. Right. Yeah.
So yes. It was sort of a, but I got, I'm the one that it aired on, I think. So, you know, I get some credit for that. That's usually the biggest thing. Or they say, I don't really remember you. How far did you get? You know, that's the worst.
Like, I was with the Voltaggio season, you know?
Oh yeah. Voltaggio brothers. Oh yeah. They were great. That's usually how it goes.
Oh, you were there? Ash. I remember Ash Lee, but not Ash. No.
Which is funny because before the show, I did go by Ashley, and then they switched our names, and Ashley used to go by Ash. So they sort of switched our names on the show, just in the credits, and so it just sort of stuck since then. So,
interesting.
Weird thing.
Well, that's funny.
Can you give us an update on Hill Country and just the restaurant industry before we go? Just some special shout-outs you want to give during these really tough times.
I mean, it's bleak right now. I mean, New York City, I think they've closed – 30% of the restaurants are currently closed, most of them not reopening. I mean, the best things that we can do right now, because I think it is important that we don't have inside dining in New York City right now. And I'm one of the few people saying that because the public health is in trouble. And we currently in the United States, I think we had 6 million cases of corona total in the United States. So it's important that we combat this. However, support your restaurants. I think Hill Country, you know, we've been very lucky. We've remained open the entire time for delivery, and we have now opened for outdoor dining. So if you can eat out comfortably and you feel safe, do it. Order in occasionally. Buy a gift card. Just do whatever you can to support restaurants. I think it's like, it'll be a shame to see a lot of good restaurants close. And New York is losing a lot of the old guard right now. It's really sad.
Yeah, Kevin. We gotta go to Hill Country at some point.
We do need to go to Hill Country. I went with friends about 5 years ago, and I need to get back again. It'll have to be hopefully 2021.
Oh, but, yeah, we'll still be there.
Yeah, no, I mean this is sort of one of the hoping that restaurants, which just have given up so much in the last several years, so many people, it already is an industry where people are sacrificing livelihood, well-being, in some cases just quality of life, to make it work. And the idea that even that might be shattered is just it's really sad. I hope we come out of this where our favorite places, our favorite people, our favorite chefs, our favorite food, the entire supply chain is doing okay, but it's something I'm just extremely concerned about.
Well, look, I think the good news about the industry is the hospitality industry as a whole is very strong, and it's something that people need. People need to be taken care of. They need to be given spaces where they can leave their hectic worlds and just be given and served and take a breath and breathe and find joy. So I think the people will need it. Now, whether or not this is going to be a rocky time, and we'll have to combat the large chains that are able to sort of weather this better than some of the smaller restaurants. But the thing I think about and the thing that gives me hope is that 24-year-old that just graduated the CIA that has the next great idea and the next great food trend or the next great restaurant or the next great place, and they're 24 years old and they can't open a restaurant right now, and real estate drops through the tank, and they're going to open their small restaurant in the West Village, and then they're the next, you know, Brad Atkins or the next, you know, Paul LeBron, who I don't know where he is, but the next Paul LeBrand, the next, you know, great chef. So I think there is some sadness to this, but I think it's also a little bit of a cleansing and clearing the air and giving some new people a real chance.
Hope so.
Ash, this was great.
Awesome. Well, thanks for doing the pod, guys. It's fun that we're gone but not forgotten, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it was really cool to get back with Chef Jen, and we've reached out to a few chefs, but getting you on the show, just because I don't know, we could talk to you for hours.
Come to Hill Country.
We will, for sure.
All right,
Kevin, awesome. You want to take us out?
Sure. For Tom Havistrope, for Chef Ash Falk, this is Kevin Arnovitz, and this is Pack Your Knives.
With everything you have on your plate, earning your degree online seems impossible. But at Grand Canyon University, we specialize in helping you fit a master's degree in business into your busy day. Your graduation team, led by your own GCU counselor, provides you with the personal support you need to succeed. Achieve your goals with a plan and team behind you. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Visit gcu.edu.